Hold on.
Okay. To set the stage, this is the third in our interviews with league members. We have this being Veterans Day, November the 11th, 2015. Present in the room are Anka Voss, who is the director of the Champaign County Archives, and the Gullah Roots, Lois and Ernie, who both are members of League and will be our primary example of family memberships and establish the fact that men can be members of the League of Women Voters as much as women. I'm going to start talking first to Lois, and then we'll have a more or less a separate interview with Ernie, and then talk to them together as we move through this. So Lois, could you start by telling us a little bit about your family background, where you grew up, what your family life was like?
I grew up in Winfield, Kansas, with a very warm, happy family of three siblings, all of whom were older than I, and my father and mother. My father worked at Southwestern College there in Winfield. And I was always very grateful for Winfield having a fine music program in their schools, which got me started on my professional career as a violinist and viola player. We would spend summers after 1937 in Woodland Park, Colorado, because we got a chance to buy a part of a lot, and my dad, who had had a father who was a carpenter, built a cabin. So we spent many happy years there. And then Ernie and I bought it later when the parents couldn't go to that altitude.
Okay. So I take it you were a good student?
I was.
Okay. And music was what, an early love of yours?
Very much so.
Okay.
But I also like other things, so I did get good grades. I was one of, our school, high school had a graduation where there were five honor students.
Wow.
Who gave the commencement program for our high school. And I got to play a violin solo with our local high school orchestra,
okay.
with which I had played for.
And how many students were in this high school when you were there?
Well, our graduating class was 179.
Oh, and so it's about 500 students?
I think so, because it was a building that incorporated both the junior high and the high school.
Oh,
so it was okay. Seventh grade through 12.
Oh, okay. And when you finished high school, did you go on to college?
I did.
And where was that?
I went right there in Winfield to Southwestern, from which my parents and my older siblings had also graduated. And I got my degree in 1952.
In?
Violin and public school music.
Oh, okay.
They called it public school music then rather than teacher education. Then I proceeded that right in the next month to go to Wichita University, which is now Wichita State University, and got my master's.
Okay.
In violin.
And did you plan to teach music or perform professionally, or what was your goal?
My goal was always to play in a symphony, and teaching was the way to get there.
Okay.
Financially, mostly. But I enjoyed teaching. And my first year teaching was in a little town in Kansas, and they had had just one instrumental music director, and they decided that they wanted to hire a string person. So they just sliced the program down the middle, and I was supposed to have the grade schools, a junior high, a high school, and to start a junior college orchestra. This was a little much for a first-year teacher.
And that would mean you would travel around to these schools.
My first salary was supposed to be $3,000 a year, but they upped it to $3,600 because I had to have a car to be able to get around to the various schools.
Okay. So how long did you teach?
Well, I left that school after the first year, having gone to a conference and been recruited by a director from Wichita Falls, Texas.
Oh.
And so they had a string program that they had one teacher, and he had so many students signed up that they needed to have another one. So they hired me, and before we got it all put together, they needed a third teacher doing that first year. And so one of my good friends from graduate school came, and we were roommates for the time I was in Wichita Falls.
Okay. And so how did you end up in Illinois?
The short story or the long story? Ernie and I met in Wichita Falls.
Okay.
And we're married there. And when he got out of the service, this is part of his story, he got a job in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Okay.
And then when that looked like a dead end professionally, he was advised to go back to graduate school. So we spent 3 years in St. Louis, University City, and he worked on his doctorate. And then we got a job here in Illinois. He got a job here in the University of Illinois.
Okay. So this was what year now?
1965.
Okay. All right. So when you moved into this community, what was your impression of the community, both geographically, culturally?
I liked it because I remember our realtor saying, as she took us around to look at houses, and everything is less than 15 minutes apart. I thought, that's very nice, very nice. I was used to pretty flat farmland, so that didn't bother me, because we always went to Colorado in the summer off the mountains, so I didn't have to be bothered by the our first impression of having to come to Illinois was, we're going east. Anything of east of the Mississippi River was east. And when we got here, people talked about, oh, how do you like the Midwest? To us, this was not Midwest, having come from the prairie states.
Yeah, okay. So if it wasn't the short distances, what was it that attracted you about this area? Besides the fact that Ernie was obviously going to have a job.
It had the reputation of having fine schools.
Okay.
And it had a community orchestra, which I got in right away. And so I knew I would have an orchestra to play in. And we found a house that was just up the hill from Westview School, so our boys could walk to school. Our two toddlers went to school there.
Okay. So you've stayed here since 65.
We did.
Okay. And how did you get connected with the League of Women Voters?
I was invited by an active League member, Grace Shadle, who was also a fellow musician. And we got to be good friends through music, and she says, I think you ought to come to the League of Women Voters, which I did.
Okay. So had you had any civic activity or political activity at that point?
Not really. As a kid, my dad was a rabid Republican, and I can remember going out. We had our own little, 9-year-olds or 10-year-olds. We went out, and we were the Wilkie Club, and we just collect. I don't know if we collected pennies or whether it was just a club that was fun. Anyway, that was my civic connection before that.
Okay. So when you joined League, thanks to Grace, where did you start as far as activities and doing things? And
my first meeting was the membership meeting at the first of the year.
Okay.
And all the committees had the little sign-up sheets around the room. And I was very interested in natural resources.
Okay.
Because I love farming, and I love the
mountains,
and I thought that would be interesting. So then after I had signed up, I guess I must have been the first on the list because I turned out to be the head of the committee. and dear Mary Blair brought me a whole box of information that had been collected and a list of the ladies who had been interested in this. And I called all of them and called a meeting, and we had several monthly meetings, I think, and I figured we ought to do something constructive with the time we had. And as I remember, either the first or one of our first visitors or guests as our speaker was Bruce Knight from the planning department.
Oh my gosh.
And he was very kind and generous, and I got very excited about this business of community, how you build a community, what goes into it, and the political activity that is involved.
Okay.
So I feel like that was it was a prospicious start, because I got me into several things that I really, really enjoyed.
Oh, good. And in addition to League, did you get involved with other community activities, projects? You mentioned the symphony, obviously.
I was a election judge for 25 to 30 years, so that was pretty early. And I liked that. I liked the feeling of responsibility for doing that, plus the seeing all the neighbors come in and being a part of the neighborhood.
Sure.
We were both members of our church choir, and so we were active in the church.
This is the Methodist?
Wesley.
Okay.
Here on campus.
Yeah, okay.
We had a very very social justice interested pastor who was very
ecumenical.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get the word out. And he had very bright ideas. I remember when he was on the school board in Urbana for a while, and people thought that wasn't very good. We thought it was great that he was interested in other things. So he was a good role model too.
Good. And you're still very active in Wesley.
Yeah.
What are you doing there now? Because I see you at forums and.
Well, we have a progressive Sunday school class, which we're studying several books that are, as we were mentioning before we started the conversation, that are trying to get a hold on why we're losing young people and how we can make the church and religion more relevant in people's lives.
Oh. Okay.
Relevant and necessary.
Yeah.
Hmm. So I can't. That's with music, and of course, in addition to the symphony, I'm a member of the Tuesday Morning Musical Club, which has programs every other week, and we sign up in the spring to what we're going to do in the fall, and so we have regular programs, and it is now in our 202nd year as a performing club.
Wow.
With members only by audition, and so everyone is very eager to do their very best for the other members of the club who come. And also I have another musical club, the Fraternity of the Mu Phi Epsilon, which is a small group, but one from many alumni who've come from other schools and so forth. So I have found enough to do,
mm-hmm.
in addition to a league.
And you've raised two sons?
Three sons,
yes.
Okay. And they're all doing well?
Very well, yes.
Okay. Well, that is a full life.
It is. And I guess I should mention, I guess we could do that when we do this together. Two of our grandchildren are married, and we have three great grandchildren, and two more on the way. So.
Oh my gosh, wow. Oh, good. That's good. Maybe this would be a good time then to hear a bit of Ernie's story, and then we'll kind of pull both of you together. Tell me, Ernie, about your background.
Well, I grew up in a small town in northeastern North Dakota. Both of my grandparents were Norwegian immigrants who homesteaded in North Dakota. There was roughly about maybe 100 miles from the Canadian line, and I'd say about 125 from the Minnesota, so we were pretty far up there. It was a fairly new, I think my, the community itself, I think, was just started, the little town called Mattock was founded just right after the 1900.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather, I said both were Norwegian immigrants, so both became very prominent in the communities. My grandfather, my paternal grandfather, was elected to the state legislature for a one term. Story is, my grandmother thought that politicians were probably even less desirable than wife beaters and alcoholics, because she supposedly said to him, you know, and he was thinking about running again. And she said in her kind of Norwegian, well, I suppose you could do that, and I suppose you would be elected, but when you come home from Bismarck after the session's over, you won't find anybody here on the farm. And he knew that she probably meant that, so he was a one-term representative. But he was very active in the community, had a lot of leadership positions, especially in the church. And I think various other political kind of things. It was very interesting. My father actually ran this small service station in this small town, and North Dakota politics were interesting in that the rural folks tend to be, they formed the Nonpartisan League, which was an interesting political party that represented farmers interested, and it tended to be on the socialistic side. As a matter of fact, North Dakota still has a state mill and elevator that sells flour and that kind of thing. So if you buy a sack of Dakota made flour, the money goes to the state treasury. So it had that, you know, that, and then, you know, like the North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, all had these progressive, this kinds of movements, and my grandfather was quite interested in that. My father, on the other hand, because he was a small businessman, and he was active in they had two divisions in the Republican Party. One was I'd say the progressive element, who were involved in mostly farmers who were involved in and they had, of course, Norway had a tradition of socialistic, so they brought that with them from Norway. My dad, because he was a small businessman, got aligned with the more conservative thing because they felt that they were at a disadvantage with respect to the other branch. So he was like a community precinct man and all those kinds of things. So, and we got various political notice. So the politics was a frequent discussion in our house and the service station.
And did you have siblings?
No, I'm it.
Really? You're the only child?
Only child. Yeah. Parents, I think, married a bit late. And I have a feeling, I was a kind of an unsocialized being, so they probably thought, if one is bad enough, we had two of them, it'd really be hell on wheels.
Well, it's kind of unusual for a family with a farming background to not have children, because you expected them to work.
Yeah, for instance, in my mother's family, I think there were 11 children.
Uh-huh.
In my father's family, there was 3.
Okay.
And he was the only boy, had 2 sisters.
Okay. So, tell me a little bit about your educational background.
Okay, well, in the little town, they actually had 2 different high schools. The Mattock Public School, which was, you know, like any other school, small school.
Uh-huh.
And then there was through state legislation, they developed this experimental thing called the Benson County Agricultural and Training School. And the whole idea was it was designed for farm families mostly. And they figured the boys need to know more scientific principles of agriculture. And of course, the girls are going to be housewives, so the home ec problem was strong. And so, but they had enough courses so they could be qualified for, college prep.
Okay.
You know, this kind of thing.
Okay.
So, then after I finished high school, I went to the University of North Dakota and,
majored in?
Well, I finally majored in math. And minored in sociology, anthropology, social work. It was all one small department. But I had about 4 or 5 intervening majors before I finally found out what I wanted to be when I grew up.
Oh, okay.
So it was an adventure.
Okay.
Yeah. Then after I finished the University of North Dakota, I went to University of Kansas and got my master's in social work. And more in terms of psychiatric social work. Then I had gotten this during the Korean War, and I'd gotten exemptions for so I could finish my degrees. Then afterwards, I had the military commitment, so I first of all tried to through the Army, but there was a lot of red tape, and that didn't work out. And then the Air Force just started one, and so I applied and was accepted. And then I spent my Wichita Falls, Texas, Shepherd Air Force Base. They had a large military hospital there, and I was assigned to their neuropsychiatric ward.
Oh, okay.
Then we met her. I met her on a trip, this triple blind date.
And I am going to ask you about that. Okay, so then you...
Well, after my military, then we went to Colorado Springs, and for about 5 years worked in a family counseling service, and then went to WashU and got my doctorate in social work, there, and then we came here.
Okay.
Because I hadn't finished my dissertation. I wanted to come to a place that was close enough I could commute to. And so the School of Social Work here offered me a position, and they paid $1,000 more per year than Iowa, so.
Ah, okay.
And it was thought, I think we thought we came here, well, I'll finish my degree in 2 years. and then we would probably go back west again, because we were pretty much committed to that. And
okay.
It took me 6 more years to finish the dissertation. But I think by that time, we both felt that this was an ideal community. It was the right size. She was very much involved in music, because that was one of our co-commitments. Wherever I went, had to have a musical program so that we could pursue both careers.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Good. So when you came to Champaign-Urbana,
mm-hmm.
you had a university appointment.
Yes.
Okay. And did that give you room to work in psychiatric areas in the community?
It kind of indirectly, because in the School of Social Work, students have an internship in agencies, and one of the things that students had to do was do a agency-based research project, and
okay.
I supervised most of those.
Oh,
I figured a couple thousand projects I worked on in the 30 years I was with the university. But they were community-based, and I got around, found out, you know, so I got a good picture of the way social workers practiced in this, really the state of Illinois, because our students, I once figured out that I had, if I hadn't been in every students in every county, I would at least have driven through. So I have covered the state east, west, north, south.
So in this is now, we're in the mid-60s.
Yeah.
Okay. So in this community,
mm-hmm.
as you found it, where, besides the university
mm-hmm.
piece, where in the community were there psychiatric services, mental health?
Yeah, well, like the agency now called Community Elements. There was a zone center that's focused on children's services. That no longer exists, but there's a variety of different agencies that, and then it's not only here, but all over the state, so.
Okay.
And, I just had an exposure pretty much, and it's from top to bottom. We also had some off-campus programs, especially in the southern part of the state, so I scrambled all over the place, and mostly supervising students, doing projects, and that kind of thing.
And during your professional
mm-hmm.
time, what was your assessment of mental health in this community? Was it better than some?
Yeah,
probably
lacked
some serious.
I think that's that. To me, that was one of the advantages of this community. It was very progressive in terms of social services.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not only had a good, strong family service agency, the mental health center, the child and family services, it had a good variety of agencies, and I
okay.
thought it was pretty progressive.
Okay. And of course, the hospitals all had mental health.
Yeah, like Provena, I think, had a...
they used to talk about the fifth floor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I think they all had psychiatrists or psychologists that saw people on an outpatient basis. So they were, that was available.
Okay.
Now, I think what's varied across, of course, like what situation we're in now, is the state subsidy for services. And right now we're in a tough situation. many agencies have to are cutting staff, curtailing services until they get this budget thing figured out.
Okay. And you went on, besides your work, mm-hmm. you got involved in politics, mm-hmm. By virtue of mental health boards.
Yeah.
You observed the mental health board,
mm-hmm.
Here in Champaign County. What insights did that give you?
Well, I think the when you start looking at a community-wide, the mental health board funds many different programs and instigates some, you know,
uh-huh.
because that's part of the charge,
right.
is to provide funding and for a number of different programs. So as a result, we had a pretty comprehensive service system for people with mental health problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of, and I was probably a little more active than some other people because I still had that North Dakota political activism part of my genes, I guess.
And when it's inherited, there's no way you get out of it.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So both of you, you have a tremendous interest in the community,
mm-hmm.
where you've been. Not exactly in the same areas.
No.
You know, your mental health and Lois was in music and
that was one of the things that we very much had in common was interest in arts and things like that.
Okay.
She as a performer, me as a consumer of the things. And of course, the should mention that one of the most important reasons we still here is the Krannert Center for Performing Arts. That's such an unusual, and it has such high quality performances in a marvelous setting. So you would be hard put to find its equal anywhere.
Yeah. And Krannert was built about the time that you came here.
They were. Like, they had torn down the houses and where the site was to take place, and so we watched them build it and attended the first concert that was performed there.
Oh wow!
I played in the first symphony concert that was played there.
There you go.
And that was my first opportunity to play principal. The conductor had called me up and said, Lois, the principal is ill today, you're going to sit first. So,
oh, wow.
I remember playing the Midsummer Night's Dream Scherzo. I don't know what else we played, but I remember that. And opening in that gorgeous place, that was a real adventure.
Thrill.
Yeah, to be able to be part of the opening of that facility.
Yeah, how nice.
Yeah,
that's great. So, so tell me the meeting story.
As he mentioned, it was a triple blind date. The girls, of whom I was one, were recruited from our Sunday school class. And the man from the BOQ, the bachelor's quarters, had gotten the three guys together. We never did know how they got with each other, because they weren't dating and they didn't end up with either couple. But we were scheduled to go to a series of one-act plays at Midwestern University there in town. And there were three of them, I believe. And so this was sort of a triple thing all the way around. We were the only one, a couple of the three couples, that recognized one of the plays. Both of us had some experience of hearing or seeing The Lady Is Not for Burning by Christopher Fry. Christopher Fry?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we had sort of an empathy with the play and with each other as playgoers. And we were matched because we were the two tallest.
You know, as with a mathematical background, I can see there was a mathematical basis for our relationship.
Funny how that works.
Yeah.
that was in December, and I got a phone call from him in late February or early March, and he was asking me to go to one of the plays that was coming to town, which was Tea and Sympathy.
Oh, okay.
And I accepted. And then the next week or so after that, within that month, I saw him at a professional music program.
Oh.
And I was wandering around the halls with some of my little students, and he came down the hall, "Oh, you like classical music?"
And this is 19, what?
By that time, it was 56.
56, okay. Okay.
Then we went on a picnic, and I found out he could build a fire out in the middle of nowhere, out of nothing. I thought, man, someone who's interested in the arts, both plays and has that empathetic, there's something about theater. You have to have empathy with the people you're with,
yeah.
Or you don't appreciate it.
Yeah.
I remember on one of our dates, she told me about this dream that there was her formal dress, concert dress, next to her hiking boots, and she described me that was, you know, two very important areas of her life, and I found out she had been a camp counselor in a camp in Rocky Mountain National Park and all that sort of thing. I said, can you believe a musician, hiker, outdoor enthusiast? And so I thought, well, I can't let that one go by.
So it was sort of love at first sight?
No,
not really.
It developed, but it was rather rapid.
Okay.
Yeah, once we found out more, you know, we had these hints, but once we got better acquainted and exchanged conversations, then we found out that we really basically had tremendous common areas of interest.
It was pretty much that spring.
Yeah.
We made the decision. I think we went home in July to tell Daddy that we wanted to be married. Mm-hmm. And we decided we'd be married at Thanksgiving. And his question, why are you going to wait?
You don't hear
Daddy,
that from parents.
Daddy, you have to have some time to prepare these things.
Well, I think we're both getting kind of long in the tooth, so it's all going to say, you're going to get married, it better be soon. Otherwise.
Okay.